I'm Leslie Wise. This is Ethics and Jurisprudence. I'd like to go over some introductory comments to the course and give you some idea of how we'll organize the lectures in this course. Ethics and Jurisprudence discusses those two items. Ethics we'll discuss for the first half. Jurisprudence, legal matters, we'll discuss the second half. In the first half, and in the ethics realm, we will divide the topics into three areas, dealing with a series of relationships. And we will discuss first the doctor-patient relationship. This will be the most inclusive and will take most of the time that we'll spend on ethics. The second relationship is doctor-doctor relationships. And there we're talking about inter and intra-professional relationships. The obligations that we as chiropractors have toward other chiropractors, the intra-professional, and toward other healing arts providers, inter-professional. Thirdly, we will discuss the doctor and the public relationship. And in that particular category, we will talk about the doctor's relationship with certain public entities, like the government and insurance companies, corporate relationships. So that's a relatively short topic that we won't spend a great deal of time on. Back to the first one, the doctor-patient relationship is the one that we will spend most time on in this course. And the way I would like to place this into play here is by discussing doctor-patient relationships in terms of several obligations that we as chiropractors have in our ethical obligations toward patients. Remember, at some point we discuss personal ethical matters and then professional ethical matters. One of the professional ethical matters is that we have certain obligations to our patients. Certain things are expected from us. So I would like to position this in terms of what a patient has a right to expect from an ethical doctor of chiropractic. And so we'll create a bit of a shopping list here to make it sort of easy. We'll create a shopping list of items, of things that a patient has a right to expect from an ethical doctor of chiropractic. The first one, we mentioned this before in terms of our professional ethical code, that we owe to our patients absolute confidentiality. Confidentiality has been the concept that confidentiality is very important has existed since the time of Hippocrates. Those of you who are familiar with the Hippocratic Oath, which has been used in medicine for many years and in various incarnations, will know that that oath taken by medical doctors over the years has built into it a confidentiality clause. The language of the original Hippocratic Oath is something to this effect, that I will not noise abroad information that I receive during the course of taking care of a patient. Noise abroad is an archaic term having to do with gossip. We will not gossip about our patients, we will not spread information in any way that might embarrass or poke fun at, or in any way be used to the detriment of our patient. We owe a sacred obligation of confidentiality to our patients. In other words, we keep quiet about what goes on in our consulting room and in our adjusting rooms. It's not the privilege of any other person to have access to that information, with a couple of exceptions. The obvious exceptions are in a child-parent relationship. The parent is obviously entitled to information concerning the child's care. And we are always looking out for the welfare and benefit of our patient, and very often the welfare and benefit of a child is certainly carried out by the parent, and so we are in constant contact with the parents of children that we may be taking care of. The other situation here would be in the case of a person who has been deemed incompetent, perhaps by a court, and a guardian has been appointed. We run into this these days with Alzheimer's patients, and there are lots of patients who have Alzheimer's symptoms who are under chiropractic care. And as chiropractors, we provide care for these people, but we have an obligation to the patient and to their guardian to act in the best interests of the patient. And that involves coordination and consultation with the guardian. So those are two exceptions to the absolute confidentiality rule, parent and guardian situations. Back to the confidentiality arrangements. Some of the items that come up are very mundane items, but nevertheless need to be considered. In terms of confidentiality, the obvious thing is that we don't gossip about our patients. Nobody in our office should gossip about patients. During the course of taking care of a patient, you are likely to run into and have access to information that is potentially embarrassing or harmful to a patient. And we are always looking out for the best interests of our patient. It's very important that we keep quiet about information. That goes for your office help too, your CAs, your secretary, your insurance clerk, all owe the obligation of confidentiality to your patients. If a problem arises and one of your staff members feels the need to gossip and noise abroad information about the patient, you are the potential person to be sued. And so it's very important that you, as the doctor and the boss in an office situation, maintain confidentiality as an absolute office policy. You should have a written policy for your employees concerning confidentiality. We don't talk about patients outside the office. We don't talk about anything to do with them. And we do not bring up information that is potentially embarrassing or harmful in any way. So idle chat and gossip is certainly to be avoided at all costs. One of the other items that come up, I see just mentioning this, and you may even think it too small to mention, but that we don't do things like list a patient's name in a newsletter, or put the patient's name on a bulletin board, or some sign that you have in your office honoring a patient for some reason. I've seen in chiropractors' offices the birthday sign poster. There's a poster or a bulletin board that says happy birthday to the following people for the month of December, and it has a list of patients. Patients may not wish their birthday listed, they may not wish their name listed. It is okay to do that sort of thing if you have the patient's permission. So we back up to this, that you only reveal some information about a patient if you have the patient's permission. And it's acceptable to do so if the patient allows it and gives you permission. Best to have a little written statement or a written form that the patient can sign saying it's okay to put my name on the bulletin board, or it's okay to list my name in your newsletter, or it's okay to put a photograph on the bulletin board. I see chiropractors with photographs on bulletin boards in their office. And as long as the patient gives you permission in writing, then there's no harm in posting the picture, the name, the photograph. I've seen signs in front of a chiropractor's office saying, thank you to the following patients for referring patients, and they would list names. Again, only with the patient's permission. What if you have a patient who is a famous figure, a popular figure, a sports figure, a political figure, or an entertainment figure? It's something to consider. You might like to have other people know that you take care of that patient. It looks good for you, doesn't it? It looks good that you have a famous person hobnobbing with you and coming to you for chiropractic care. And it is acceptable to use the endorsement of a famous person with the famous person's permission only. You know, famous people, they make money doing this. I'm sure you're aware of Michael Jordan and his basketball shoe endorsements. He makes millions of dollars a year for endorsing basketball shoes. If some basketball shoe company were to be using his name, his image, his likeness somehow without his permission, there'd be a big lawsuit, believe me. We can run into that situation in a chiropractic setting if you were to use a patient's name or likeness, picture, information about them without their permission. And you could get in big trouble. You could be sued for using someone's name or likeness. It's called breach of privacy. And in certain situations, the person's name is trademarked. And you could be in trouble for using a person's trademark names without paying them a licensing fee. So that's another important area. We see a lot of chiropractors taking care of sports figures, entertainment figures, and then putting their arms around that person and posing for a photograph for the cover of a chiropractic magazine. You can bet that the famous person has given permission for that picture. You wouldn't do it without it, so you'd be cautious with that. Another touchy area in the area of confidentiality is dealing with relatives. You know, many, many chiropractic practices are comprised of large family groups. It is not unusual to have a very large extended family under chiropractic care at the same chiropractor. It's just sort of the way human nature works. When somebody gets under chiropractic care and they refer a patient, they'll refer their relatives. They'll refer mom and dad and aunts and uncles and nephews and nieces and in-laws and outlaws and cousins. And so it is not unusual that chiropractic practices would have large extended family groups all as patients. One of the things that happens here is those people who are close to other people by virtue of the fact they're related may feel a little bit privileged to have information about how Uncle Fred is doing, or you know, how's Aunt Susie's low back problem coming along. One of the things we have to be careful of here is that other person, unless they are specifically given permission by the patient, is not entitled in any way to information about that patient. It is not their business. I've had patients ask me before, can I see my brother's x-rays? You know, can I see my wife's x-rays? And I say, only with their permission. And you need to ask them. And so I can't show them to you. That would be up to the patient. And if they say it's okay and tell me it's okay, then I don't have a problem with it. But I've had patients ask that. They're just some idle curiosity, perhaps. The other thing you have to remember here is that family groups, while they're supposed to be close and have close relationships, sometimes family relations can be the most vicious, vitriolic relationship you can imagine. People within a family hate each other's guts and will use information that they get against a person for their own gain or to harm that person. So it's important that you sort of stay out of those situations that may arise. I've had brothers-in-law and sisters-in-laws who hate each other, and you may or may not know that. And so giving information to them very innocently could backfire into a terrible situation if those people use that information wrongly, and it's been done. So be extremely cautious how you deal with family groups. This brings up the question of do you, in your adjusting room situation, do you invite whole family groups in at once, or do you take people one at a time? My idea about that is to let the patients themselves set the tone of how you're going to deal with that. When I have a married couple in the waiting room, and you know, I don't really necessarily want to say, well, both of you come in, because they may not want that. They may actually feel that that's infringing on their privacy somehow. Somebody, you may do something embarrassing on the adjusting table. You know, sometimes when a thrust is given in the thoracic spine, you snort or something, and it could be potentially embarrassing to someone. So some patients don't want anybody else watching them while they're getting adjusted. Other patients could care less, and they would invite the whole block in. It doesn't matter. So here's my way of dealing with that. Let the patients set the tone. So when a married couple is sitting in the waiting room, I don't ever open the door and say, come on in, both of you. I don't say that. What I do is open the door and stand there and let whoever comes, come. What I find is sometimes a married couple will both get up, walk in the room, they both sit in the adjusting room, no problem. Other times, the husband gets up first, comes in, gets adjusted, leaves. The wife comes in, gets adjusted, leaves. I let them decide. I don't. I don't decide for them. Sometimes the second party may ask, is it okay if I come in? And your response would be, it's okay with me if it's okay with the patient. And let, you know, and you can make a joke out of it. You don't have to, you know, make it a life and death matter. But always allow the patient the latitude to be as private as they wish. One of the party, one of the married couple, may wish to discuss something with you in a private situation. And if their spouse is sitting right there, it may hamper the ability of that person to engage in free conversation with you and let you know things that you may need to know in taking care of the patient. So be extra cautious with family members in terms of releasing information, not giving information to people who are not entitled to it. We run into another situation here. What about releasing information to some third party, for example, an insurance company? Very often, if you complete a form for a patient in order to get them reimbursed for care, it involves personal information, name, address, phone number, marital status, and what kinds of problems they're having. So it's important that the patient know that you're going to release this information. And if you look at any insurance form, the HICFA 1500 has block number 12 and number 13, which have to do with release of information. It is built into every insurance form you'll ever see. Every insurance form has a place for the patient to sign that says, I authorize the doctor or the healthcare provider to release any information to my insurance company that may be helpful in processing this claim. Patient signs it. Make sure if you're going to release that information, if you're going to fill out an insurance form for a patient, make sure that they authorize it and they sign that block 13 that says it's okay to release the information. In the days of computer-generated insurance forms, it's difficult for the patient to sign every single one of those forms. So what we have is sort of a standard form that the patient signs that blank with that statement, I authorize release of information statement. They sign it, you keep it in their file, and then the computer prints out on block 12 and 13, signature on file. That is an acceptable way to deal with this. You have the signature on file. The computer then merely types in the words signature on file, that we do have that signature on file. And if you say you do, make sure you have it. That the patient does give you authorization to release information. So a little rule of thumb that you can think about is no piece of paper, no phone conversation, no bits of information about a patient leave your office without patient permission. That means insurance forms, that means conversations, that means telephone calls. You never release information about a patient without the patient's permission. It's just a good rule to go by. If you have questions of whether I should release information or not, you say to whoever's wanting the information, I'm going to check with the patient first. And if they don't mind me releasing the information, I don't mind releasing it, but I want their permission. We run into little situations here about employers. I've had situations arrive over the years where a patient comes in the office, while they're in the office or later that day, you'll get a phone call from their boss, maybe, saying, did Joe Blow come into the office for chiropractic care today? And the answer to that is, it's none of your business. But in the practical world, the real world, you know, it is the boss's business sometimes. And you have to use your own judgment about saying, yes, that person was here, but I'm not telling you any more than that. I'm just telling you they were here. Because that may be what they're looking for. Sometimes the boss is just checking to see if Joe Blow really came in because he told them he was going to the chiropractor. So they're just checking up on it. So obviously you don't want to get the patient in trouble by saying, well, I'm not releasing any information about whether they were here or not, which is really the right thing to do is not to give any information. But sometimes you may say, I'm going to check with the patient. If the patient doesn't mind me telling you that information, I'll tell you. But you be extremely cautious about releasing information. Here's another little tidbit that you may not even think about. Whether or not a patient is your patient is a private issue. You know, letting someone else know who your patients are is something that you keep private. It is not your business to release a list who your patients are. You know, you may say, well, I'm not releasing any information, just their names. That's information, and you don't release it. There is the potential for embarrassment to patients, you know, just for being a chiropractic patient. Think of this, medical doctor's spouse and family coming to you for chiropractic services. It may be embarrassing to them if their medical doctor or spouse knew about it, or if other associates of their medical doctor spouse knew that you were a chiropractic patient. And we respect the privacy and of patients in all situations, even when it's, you know, being embarrassed because you're a chiropractic patient. We don't think that's any big deal, but some people might. And it's our obligation to keep private information that is private. So we don't release information about who our patients are, you know, much less anything about their condition, about what kind of problems they're having, or how their course of care is going. None of that, or how they injured themselves. That's all private information. You keep it private, and don't release that information to anybody else. Another little obvious thing that comes up, if you were to write a scholarly article, perhaps, if you're writing an article that concerns patient care, and perhaps you're going to use in your article photographs or x-rays, you would obviously make sure that any photograph that reveals a person's identification, or x-rays that reveal a name tag or patient identification, you would obviously make sure that the patient gives you permission to use those articles in a publication. You know, the other possibility is that you obliterate the name tag. And you've all seen photographs of somebody with a bag over their head, or photographs with their eyes blanked out by a black square or something. That's to maintain confidentiality and privacy. So you would want to make sure that a patient is not identifiable on any photograph or any x-ray or any bit of information. You know, it is possible to identify a person without revealing their name, isn't it? You know, if you said the mayor of New York City is a patient of mine, you know, you don't have to mention the person's name. People know who it is. Or if you say the shortstop of the New York Yankees is a patient of mine, that is a person. So you don't want to make that an identifiable entity. So make sure that you conceal the privacy issues, that you make sure that privacy issues are upheld.